everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. This week, I'm joined by Dr. Hazel Wallace. Hazel is a really great friend of mine, and so I took my mic and my kit on the road and I went to visit Hazel to record this episode. And after 18 months of virtual recordings, it was really great to be back in the room and to connect and to be able to record this conversation. Now, many of you may know Hazel Wallace as the food medic. So she's created an incredible professional brand around her work as a doctor, around her passion for exercise and healthy living and nutrition. She's an author. She also hosts the Food Medic podcast. And as I mentioned, you know, she's done a really great job of creating this professional brand. But what I think this conversation will do is show another side to Hazel, maybe a more personal side to her. And we talk a lot about her experience during the pandemic, working for the NHS, but also all of the other parts of who she is and, you know, being a high performing person, being an ambitious woman, and all of the different things that come with that. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Hazel. Let's dive into this week's episode. Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Hazel Wallace, welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. It's so good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, it's so nice to be back on the podcast.
And for the listeners of the show who know, I've been recording remotely for, I guess, almost 2 years. I don't know, since the start of the pandemic. And this is my first face-to-face recording. I'm on the road today with my mic. So I literally brought all of my equipment with me. Really hoping the sound's still going to be good. But it's so good to actually see you and, yeah, be able to connect and record together.
Yeah, actually, this has been my first face-to-face podcast since the start of the pandemic. So it's actually really nice to see your face and speak to you.
And last time you were on the Power Hour podcast was actually 2018. That is wild. It was like, I think, one of the first, say, 10 episodes. So if you haven't heard that episode, it's absolutely brilliant. You have to go all the way back because there's been like 150 now, but scroll all the way back. It was in the first 10. And yeah, I mean, a lot has gone down, Hazel, since then.
I know a lot. I don't even know where to start, but 2018 seems like a very long time ago.
Yeah, well, I guess where I'd like to start, because of course, anyone who follows you online will know that for the last, you know, you've worked in the NHS for a long time, but for the last 2 years during the global pandemic, you know, you lived alone in lockdown, you worked for the NHS literally through the peak and the start of the everything unfolding here in London. So I'd love to start with that really and just see, firstly, how did you cope? And secondly, how you just to hear what that experience was like for you.
I did lockdown on my own in London, and I was redeployed very early on as a COVID doctor. So I was originally working in gastroenterology, and then I moved. So that was on a Wednesday. I was told that I'm going to start working as a COVID doctor, and I started my job on the Friday, and our whole ward was just turned round into this like COVID ward. And we are a bunch of gastroenterology doctors who don't typically look after the lungs. Obviously, if you're a doctor, you're kind of medically trained in all aspects of the body. But it was a real shake up to kind of our typical day-to-day medicine. And obviously, we're dealing with this new illness that no one knew anything about, and we were having lectures from doctors all over the world as they were learning about it, like different virologists, epidemiologists, what should we be doing, what things to look out for, like how to manage a patient who becomes very unwell. And it just went from 0 to 100 so quickly. And my first week was a 7-day back-to-back shift. Obviously I came home in between, but it was like 7 days on, and it was so intense. But we were kind of, it was exciting at the same time, because you feel like you're contributing and helping, and you don't have time to think about the sheer magnitude of patients that you're seeing. And London, March, April 2020 was not a good place, and the hospitals were really swimming in it. So that was stressful, and I think it helped me get through the pandemic having a bit of routine and going into work every day. But by the time we got to August and things settled, I was just so fatigued and ready to take a break.
Yeah, and I guess before we even got to August, when it first started, you mentioned then about the intensity of being in the hospital every day. I can't help but think, maybe as a doctor, you're just used to being selfless, but I can't help but thinking, were you not afraid yourself? As you said, no one really knew what it was, what the effects long term were going to be, how kind of deadly it was. Were you fearful that you would become infected with COVID yourself?
Yeah, so I got COVID really early on. At the time, we weren't testing, but on reflection, that's what I had. And that was the first week of kind of our lockdown. And so I was off sick, and all of the doctors on our ward, we were just dropping like flies. It was just one after the other, just everyone getting COVID. And when we first started working, we weren't really sure what PPE to wear. And also, we didn't have that much available. So we were just wearing plastic pinnies, like that you'd sell cakes with initially, and a mask. And so, but you're like, you know, up close and personal with a patient who's breathing very heavily and coughing and expelling the virus. And so, you know, it was only going to happen. So I was scared, but I was also naive. But for me, when I was at my most scared was Christmas 2020, when things became really bad again. And I got a call to say that I needed to come back to work. And I was then spent my New Year's Eve in the hospital, and for January and February of 2021 worked on ITU as a nurse because we didn't have enough nurses. I'm not trained as a nurse, but that's what my job was. And I was so scared. I remember just crying to my mum on the phone because I just didn't know if I had it in me to go back and do that again.
Wow. I mean, it's incredible, incredibly powerful to hear you say that so honestly, and also so admirable for you to have done that and for you to have gone back, because actually I do remember us having a conversation in between those lockdowns, you know, the first one and the Christmas one. And I remember, you know, you saying how difficult it was. And I guess when you get that call to say, okay, we need more doctors, we need more nurses, can you come back? You didn't have to say yes, right? You know, I know you're a trained doctor, and I know that's innate. It's why you became a doctor. But you could have said, you know what? No, like for my mental health, for my physical health, I've been in the trenches doing this for months. And actually, you know, I need a break. And nobody could have criticized you for doing that. So yeah, I guess how did you, or why did you say yes and go back into that environment again?
I think, yeah, like I feel like I couldn't just sit back and not go in. And when you know, you go into medicine for a reason, and that's to help people. And so I wouldn't be able to be happy with myself if I didn't go in and do my best. But it did come to a point, you know, April time, where I was very burnt out and had to take time out of work, and took maybe 2 weeks off all types of work, my food medic work, hospital work, everything, and had like intense therapy because I just was like, I can't even move forward. And I maybe spent 3 days in bed just sleeping and crying, and I got through it in the end. And like now I feel I'm in, you know, I'm absolutely fine, and you know, I'm so glad I got through it. But like, I just suppressed so much to just get through the shifts, because the things that you experience on those shifts is like, you just have to suck it up and just get on with it because it's work. But then you have to come home and try sleep and go and do it again the next day. And I just, you know, I worry about the mental health of everyone in the NHS after what we've been through.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, gosh, I'm so glad that, you know, you had that time to, I guess, recover. I mean, even when you said 2 weeks, I was thinking that is not long, to be honest. I was thinking 2 months wouldn't have even been long. So yeah, are other people that you work within the NHS, are they able to take that time out? And is the support available for them to do therapy? Can they rest? Do you feel that everybody has had an opportunity to try and recover?
No, I don't think so. I think like, obviously, if you're really struggling, you can, you know, take sick leave like you could with every job, and you get signed off by your own GP. And there are psychologists available in the NHS, but again, like, it's not as easily accessible. And I think I'm like in a place of privilege where I have I paid for my own therapist because I just didn't know what to do and I didn't want to sit in a wait list, and my GP was helpful, but like, you can get referral via your GP for psychology, but again, it's a wait list, and I just thought, this is something that I want to invest in. And yeah, I think we could do so much more for staff, because like, you know, once COVID goes away, it's not like you just finish your job. We still have to deal with all of the backlogs from COVID. So yeah, it was a good lesson. Like, not that I'm grateful that I went through it, but I'm grateful that I got through it. And it made me realize what burnout actually is, because I experienced it firsthand. And I think a lot of people have experienced that this year, whether you're a doctor, a teacher, a parent, you know, because no one had that break. We just kept going because we were like, just keep hustling. We're almost through. One more lockdown. And yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, we're on the home stretch now.
Gosh, yeah, and you're right, everyone, whether you're a doctor and whether you worked in the NHS or not, whether you're a carer, whether you're a parent, you know, parents homeschooling for that amount of time, I mean, we're not qualified teachers, we're not, you know, you're trying to do so many things. And I think for a lot of people, you're right, it's just been like, okay, move on to the next thing. Kids are back to school, back to work, managing our hybrid working from home. There hasn't really been, I guess, a time for people to just go, whoa, hold on a minute, you've just spent a year or more of your life having to deal with so many things, like firefighting all the time. And of course, there has to come a point where you reflect and recover and take a break. So I hope that if for anyone listening who's thinking, gosh, I haven't had any time to rest and recover, I've just gone straight into the next thing, which is so normal for us to do that, hopefully they can take out some time before they reach that point of burnout, where it's, you know, absolutely essential, necessary. As you said, if you can't, you know, get out of bed, or then you can't take care of your kids, you can't drop them off at school, you can't cook, you can't work. So I hope people will hear that. And Hazel, knowing you, I want to move on, I guess, to the conversation from COVID and from lockdown, and knowing you for, I think it's like 6 years coming up to, which is just mad. It's such a long time. But the entire time I've known you, you are someone who is incredibly driven. You have achieved so much. You know, you've written best-selling books. You're always studying. You gained your master's degree during lockdown, as well as working, as well as your food medic, you know, podcast, your social media content. There's so much. It is a lot. It's a lot. You know, it's really a lot. And I think for high achieving people, they probably can relate to this idea of wanting to do more and achieving becoming so much, so fundamental to who they are. So I'm really interested to talk to you today about the concept of achieving and to hear your thoughts on how you manage the desire to strive and achieve more and to kind of get into that process of looking forward to the next thing, as well as understanding, you know, why you're striving for what you're striving for. So when is your work fulfilling? What makes you happy? And when does it start to become too much? Because for many high achievers, I really think it's a fine line and they want to do more and maybe they can do more. You know, I think about myself included sometimes in that. I want to do more things and I know I have the capacity to do it, but I don't want to get, you know, so close to burnout, or I don't want to stop enjoying it because I'm just relentlessly doing the next thing and the next thing. So yeah, how do you manage that fine, fine line?
That's a big question. And I think, you know, when you are someone who is a high achiever, like, you know, not for everyone, but usually it starts young, and maybe someone saw some kind of something in you when you're in school, whether that's a parent or a teacher, and they're like, wow, you're really good at X and you should try Y. And so you're like, oh, I am good at this. And then people tell you that you're really good. And so you learn quite young that like this element of validation comes with doing well in studies and academia. And yeah, and I mean, all things aside, I absolutely love learning. Like, I mean, I would go back to uni tomorrow if I could, because I just find I love that personal growth. And I think for me, that drives me a lot. And so that's why I've kind of done all the things that I've done and I've got to where I want to be. But I definitely feel like now when I achieve something really big, a big goal, that it feels good for a moment. And then I'm like, right, what's next? And it's really hard to catch yourself and be like, hey, let's just take a moment. You achieve that amazing goal that you've been working for 5 years. Do we really need to rush on to the next thing? And you can almost like fall into the cycle where you're just chasing goals and ticking boxes. But are you doing, like, to what end? Like, is it getting you closer to the life that you want to have for yourself? And that's the question I've been asking myself more in the last year. And I turned 30 last year. And I think that was a really pivotal moment for me because I'm like, okay, I'm 30 now. It is what it is. Like, am I on track for the life, my blue sky day, my blue sky life? And yes, I've done all these amazing things, but I do feel in on reflection that I may have sacrificed some of the living part of life for that like hustling side, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And I think it's really honest of you to say that because, you know, actually, funny when you said the living part, I actually did a tweet the other day, shared it on Instagram as well, basically saying that the problem sometimes with this work-life balance approach is that work is before life because that's the order of prioritization. And also, can we put living at the center of life? And I completely relate to that idea of like, I help people to set goals. I encourage people to look at you. And you know, I do this for myself, but I do this for others. You know, look at the year ahead, look at the 12 months, look at the seasons. Like, what do you want to achieve? Whether that's professional goals, personal goals. And that excites me. You know, I enjoy that. It literally lights me up. I'm like, wow. And yeah, I want to read these books. I want to meet those people. And similar to you, we wouldn't have achieved the things that we've achieved if we didn't have that. However, I think where we're both, you know, reflecting on this, like putting life at the center of life, maybe as well because of the pandemic, is that yes, you can achieve those things and they can stack up and you can tick off the boxes. But are you enjoying, you know, for example, it sounds a bit deep, but like your life is made up of years, which is months, which is weeks, which is days. And in the day to day, the things you're doing every day when you wake up in the morning or what you're spending your time doing, is that the life that you want to be living? Is that giving you energy? Are you enjoying it? Because I guess if you're just, yeah, hustling, working, head down, you know, no time for maybe friends or socializing, or some people it's no time for exercise or no time for whatever, because they're so relentless, like on that one goal, that what happens next, then ultimately, yeah, is it going to be worth it when you get it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also if you are, you know, juggling many things, it's very easy to, like, I think in my case, like a lot of people tell me, oh, like, it's amazing that you've done all these things and you juggle so many things and blah, 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 and you're superwoman. And I know that you get this as well. And then like, there's this pressure to like be that person who's always doing those things and like doing more and always doing better. And I think like this year, I've actually decided to do less, but focus more energy into the things that really matter. And so I'm like trimming back things. And I took a step back from the hospital, which was like a big identity crisis for me, because who am I if I'm not in the hospital in my scrubs? And now I'm like, you know, I'm still a doctor, but I'm like working for my own business. And the sense of fulfillment I get from that is different. But also, I've got so much life and living back that I'm like, for me, like I'm successful in a different way because I've got that.
Oh, that's great to hear. That's so great to hear. And can you give us some examples? Like, what are those things when you say you've got some life and some living back? What are those things that you're like, wow, I'm doing these things again or enjoying or have time for that you didn't before?
It's so like, you know, it's the really simple things. It's having like, all I wanted was one full day off in a weekend. And like now sometimes I'll take two full days off in the weekend. And, you know, for a lot of people, that's what they do normally as part of their job. And I think that should be normal. But ever since I qualified as a doctor, the food medic was always running. And that was always my side hustle. So if I wasn't in the hospital, I was building my brand. I was writing a book. I was doing something. I was going to meetings. I was going to events. And there was no living. And now, like, I'm traveling more within what we could do in the last couple of years. But, like, going out for brunches, I'm dating, I'm like spending time outdoors, I'm having lazy days, I'm, you know, like seeing more family and I'm catching up. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to wake up when I'm 50 and be like, oh my God, it's amazing that I've written 10 books, but I'm lonely and I have missed out on all of this.
Gosh, yeah, it's really interesting hearing that. And actually, I want to move on to another topic, but it's kind of related. So where we started off with achievement and, you know, understanding the desire to achieve and why high achievers can almost become, I guess, trapped in a loop and maybe a little bit addicted to this idea of achievement. And so I'm not sure if you're familiar with Anna Lembeck, the author of Dopamine Nation. Her work and research into dopamine is fascinating, particularly in the context of our modern world. So she really highlights how our current environment kind of makes it easy for our brain to get the dopamine reward. So if you think back, I don't know, hundreds of years ago, millions of years ago, whatever, we would have to strive and do physical and mental, you know, tough things to get dopamine. For example, to get food, to get warmth, to get shelter, to get connection from other people. Whereas now, of course, we can get those things really easily. So we can get a dopamine hit in our brain from eating delicious food, sitting on the couch, or we could get a dopamine hit from maybe watching memes and laughing on Twitter, or, you know, getting likes on an Instagram post, or I don't know, a long list of things that we can get dopamine from, but we can get them really quickly and repetitively. So we can just go one thing, another thing, press refresh, another thing, another comment, another thing, change the channel. Oh, this is interesting. And then get reach into the bag and get another chocolate. And like, you can just basically keep giving the brain more dopamine. And so because it's so easy to get it, it's obviously harder to regulate. And it's just kind of this cycle that we can't seem to break. Now, well, first I'm going to ask you about that and talk about dopamine. But then I want to think about, yeah, in this context, when I was listening to her work, it really made me think about achievement. And it made me think, you know, anything that you do on a daily basis, whether that's drinking coffee, I don't know, smoking, drinking alcohol, if you do something daily, then we class it as an addiction. And I was thinking about achievement in that way and thinking, actually, is achievement, has achievement become an addiction for me? So yeah, Hazel, over to you. I'd love to hear from you on firstly on the research and the dopamine topic.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, and a lot more researchers are speaking about it, and we're starting to learn a bit more about that, like, dopamine feedback loop. And Dr. Andrew Huberman, who does Huberman Lab, he's like a professor at Stanford University, he talks a lot about this, and I find it really fascinating to listen to because it's not my area of expertise, but I'm fascinated by it because, like you said, it's so easy to get a hit of dopamine, like every WhatsApp ding, every like, every, you know, every time you're sitting on the sofa, we can like tap into so many different dopamine stores. Like whether it's like watching your favorite program, eating a tub of ice cream while scrolling on social media. But then we're increasing our threshold to get that like buzz off dopamine. And so if we're constantly kind of operating at this higher level, it's like we need more to feel good about it. And so you have to keep doing more. You have to keep layering on more activities. And so, you know, the kind of question as to whether you can apply the same thing to success. I agree. I think like every time you tick off a goal, if you're doing like loads and you're chasing loads of different things, you can get that, like, it's almost anticlimactic because you almost need more to feel like you're enough and you're doing enough. And to be honest, I don't think I have the answer to how you overcome that. But one thing that I've been practicing is, I think with social media, for example, I know that subconsciously that gives me like a dopamine rush when I'm like sharing content that like I'm so proud of creating, and people are telling me, you know, that they're finding it useful, and yeah, or like I'm watching other people's content and I'm like, this is, you know, making me laugh or making me feel good. And I'm like scrolling through social media and I get caught in this cycle. And one thing that I practice is like having detoxes. So I, you know, for all of August, I came completely offline and it completely wiped my slate of and my relationship with social media. And like, I use it for work, so I can't not use it. But I think coming back on, I had this new appreciation for it, and I actually didn't need to use it as much to get that buzz. And I think the same thing goes for things like, you know, really enjoyable, less nutritious foods, or like going out and dancing and things like that. It's like all of these things in moderation, if you're doing it all the time, it loses it, you're going to lose interest. And so we've like kids now, like they, you know, they've got access to so many good things all at once. I think we need to learn to moderate it so that they're not like getting there and then needing more.
Got, yeah, she basically, so Anna talks about that, exactly that, the kind of threshold thing, but she also talks about the pendulum kind of swinging both ways. So if you think about like a seesaw, she describes, I guess people know about this, I guess, when it comes to alcohol and drugs, and they'll call it a come down, or they'll call it, you know, yeah, the come down, I guess. But the same thing happens in the brain. You have that come down from dopamine when it's not there anymore, because your brain is essentially trying to go back to that homeostasis, you know, the middle point. So it swings back the other way. And so interestingly, that's why she says like pain and pleasure is so linked. So when people, for example, do a cold shower or a cold ice bath, they will actually feel a physical sensation that's painful and discomfort, but they'll get the dopamine rush of pleasure. So it's really interesting that not only are we needing more dopamine to feel good, but when we pendulum back the other way, we're actually going to need more to get us back to neutral. So yeah, I don't know if you, how do you think that's affecting people when it comes to maybe exercise, a good example, because if people are then going, okay, I need to go for a run or go to the gym, it's going to make me feel good, but then it doesn't, and they're still, you know what I mean, they have this expectation, because let's be honest, it doesn't every time. Do you think that that is maybe linked as well to the fact we're always getting dopamine, so then when we're trying to do something that is the physical pain to get the pleasure, it's harder for our brains, I guess, to know what's going on?
Yeah, I agree. I think also, like, you know, there's different things that are going to give us different levels of a dopamine hit, you know, like, and like all the other hormones that are involved, but like feeling good and serotonin and all of those good hormones. But when it comes to exercise, like motivation is, not many people have motivation to exercise. And so if you're weight, or if you're depending on like that dopamine hit to carry you through, I think that's difficult. And so what you find is, like, to help increase that kind of good feeling that you get from exercise, people will choose a good playlist or a podcast or get new trainers or new headphones or add pre-workout. And it's all these things that like really add to the experience. But if you're needing all of those things every time, it's very hard to like stay motivated. And one of the things that Dr. Huberman advises is like to not tap into all of those things all of the time. So try to get back to like that feeling where you're almost like new to exercise and you're excited by it. And maybe that's changing up what you're doing. And maybe that's not listening to like really loud music all the time or using pre-workout. And then every now and then, when you really need it and you're in a really low, unmotivated phase, put the playlist on, take that pre-workout, and that will carry you through. But when it comes to exercise, I say to people time and time again, if you're waiting or relying on motivation to get you there, then that's usually setting you up for failure, because just build it in as a daily habit. When you've got habits in place, then it's automated. You're less likely to tap out on yourself. So that, I guess that's like a bit of a side note, but I think like a lot of people, not everyone gets that euphoria that some people get from exercise.
Yeah, and it's interesting saying abstain from those additional things so that then you notice and feel the benefit. She also talks about that abstaining. So whether that's anything that you feel like you are addicted to the dopamine, like you said with social media, taking a month off. For some people, it's sex. For some people, it's alcohol. You know, whatever it is, it's hard to say. Doing less is sometimes harder than just doing none. Do you know what I mean? So for me, I'm definitely like an all or nothing person. I'd rather say, like, just for example, my thing is sugar. I know I'm addicted to sugar. I've tried to reduce my sugar intake lots of times and I know that I'm addicted. So for me, if I'm like, Adrienne, enough is enough, like you need to just like sort this out, I'll be like kind of go cold turkey. And so I'm like, okay, instead of having less sugar and just having one thing, I'm like, just have none. So I don't know if that's what she means by abstain, but I think she was giving these examples of, yeah, if you can abstain. She actually talked about like 30 days, which is just so long. Imagine like 30 days, you're not going to, yeah, use your phone, or 30 days, you're not going to drink coffee. It's a long time, but I think as you mentioned, it can reset your kind of bar, I guess, you kind of your normal, so that when you re-enter after 30 days, you're like, okay, wow, like this tastes really sweet, or this run feels amazing because I've got music, whereas I just had 30 days of running with no headphones. So maybe that's an interesting challenge to kind of throw out there, and people can start to challenge themselves to maybe do a bit of a streak. Like, how long can you, yeah, abstain from something before reintroducing it again? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. So I would say, like, it's so difficult, because, and also seems like counterintuitive. Like, why would I take away the thing that actually gives me the dopamine hit? But like, it's you're getting into this cycle where you're needing more and more, and you almost need to reset so that you're like, you're feeling good and you're feeling happier at like a lower level of stimulus. And that's essentially where we want to be. That's a goal, right? You want to be happier with less as opposed to more.
Yeah, I mean, that is like, you know, capitalism. Let's try and be happier with less. And as you mentioned kids, obviously listeners know that I have a 10-year-old son, and I worry about this. You know, I worry about this for children in general, but especially, you know, looking at my own son and watching how his behavior has changed in the last year, I guess, with, you know, he's getting older, he wants to do what his friends are doing, things like games and screens. And it's kind of, again, I'm thinking about this, and I try to, for example, like, I'm not going to demonize those things and say, oh, they're going to be banned in our house. I think that's kind of too extreme. But I do try to make him do things one at a time. That's kind of my rule. So it's interesting when you mention, then if you're on the sofa and you're looking at the phone and you're looking at the TV and you're eating snacks, it's like, I try and make him do things one at a time. So I'm like, okay, if you're picking a show you want to watch and it's 30 minutes, he has to watch the whole show. And because what he likes to do, and a lot of kids I think like to do this now, is just flick through channels. And because, Hazel, do you remember when we grew up, there was like three channels, so like literally there's like cartoons or CITV or whatever. Now, if they've got Netflix and Disney Plus or Sky, or, I mean, we don't have Sky, but he will literally go from Netflix, this channel, and he'll change it like 5 minutes into the episode. He'll change, if I let him, he changed another one, or he'll say, watch something on YouTube, then change another one. And these like short bursts of like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes. So now that's the rule. It's like pick and stick, we call it. So I'll say, you know, scroll through, spend a few minutes, pick the one you want, and then you have to pick and stick. You watch that one show, and when it ends, you turn off the TV. And like with games, it's the same. Like, pick the game you're going to play today, play the game, and it's not changing every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best thing, the best advice, because yeah, when we were younger, there was less things to like stimulate us, and, you know, not all of these things are like positive behaviors. So we just need to keep that in mind. And yeah, I think we all need to be more aware of these things and like catch ourselves when we are in a low moment. And then we, you know, go to Instagram to like fill that little void, to like give us that little buzz. And yeah, it's like similar to like going back to like a toxic ex, I always think, like, because you go back to that place of familiarity where you're like, this is giving me this security, this sense of like happiness or belonging or whatever. And you get that hit of dopamine, but it's like short and sweet, and then it's gone, and then you have that come down again. And so it's just self-regulation, which we don't really practice very often anymore.
It's so hard to do it in this world, because of course things are just there. You know, it's not just because we're talking about it now, you know, we're certainly not exempt from, yeah, those things that are just there, temptations all the time. And yeah, having the discipline, I think, to self-regulate and to abstain from things and to challenge yourself to do those physical hard things, whether that is a 30-second cold shower or, I don't know, going for an extra 1K on your run with no headphones or something. But I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast and who kind of enjoy the kind of, you know, similar things and topics that we talk about on the show are those kind of people, you know, who will send in messages saying, yeah, I do the cold showers, and yeah, I do this and that. And I think they're quite open to, you know, challenging themselves mentally and physically. I'm not sure if you find the same thing, Hazel, but I think maybe I'm in a little bit of a bubble, but I think generally it seems to be that people are craving it more. And maybe that's because we have less time in our life at the moment where we have to, you know, do challenging things or face adversity or do tough things. Because of course we could live in comfort now all the time. You know, we've got electricity, we've got, you know, if we're fortunate enough, privileged enough to have, you know, food in the fridge and a nice comfy bed. And I think people are craving discomfort actually, because there's a real human element of benefit there.
Yeah, I think there's different types of people, and I imagine that like your audience and the people listening are motivated to do, you know, do better in their life and chase their goals and things like that. And so you're cut from a different cloth and you understand that that momentary discomfort brings a lot of benefit in the long run. And like not many people are willing to have that delayed gratification. We all want the instant. It's like innate human to want like instant gratification, like to taste the sweet stuff, to feel loved, all of that. But ultimately, if you can work hard for something and know that it's coming in the end, that is so much sweeter.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there's some things that you just can't do quickly, let's be honest. You know, how long did it take you to get your to become a doctor? I've studied how many years?
I did 2 degrees to get there, so 7.
7 years, you see? And I'm sure that that kind of sweet feeling of like Dr. Hazel Wallace, I'm sure seeing it, saying it, I would enjoy that every single time. So was it worth the wait?
Yeah, it was. It was. There was times where you just think that you're never going to get through, but something like getting a degree in whatever you do, I think it's just such a big milestone for everyone. Like, it's such a difficult thing. Or writing a book, or like, you know, working towards like getting a promotion. You know, there's so many different things in life, but those kind of, the hard part in those things is like, you need to just get your head down and grind through, and you're not getting instant feedback or someone telling you you're doing great all the time. And then you get to the end and yeah, it feels good. But it's also really easy to forget how good that feels.
And really easy to forget that other people have done that work. You know, that joke of like, it's the overnight success that took 10 years. And actually for anyone listening, we mentioned at the start of your episode on the Power Hour years ago. And if anyone, you know, again, I said, go back and listen to that. But you talk in that episode, actually, Hazel, I don't know if you remember this, but about, yeah, studying and saying that, you know, people might look at you now and the work you do and think, oh, you're super smart, super academic. And you, in that episode, I think you shared that you, I don't know if you didn't get accepted maybe the first time to the course that you wanted. And people, again, you know, commented saying, wow, like, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, I applied for this thing and I didn't get it, or I failed something. And in an academic context, that can be the end of the road if you let it, because you think, well, I tried that, I'm not smart enough, or I didn't get on the course. Or other people around you can maybe think, oh, you know what, that's really hard, you know, becoming a doctor, or, you know, becoming whatever, it's like, that's really hard, maybe you're not that smart. And I think a lot of people were, yeah, so uplifted hearing that you were like, no, I know I can do this, I'm going to try again, and look at you now.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like, well, if you don't try, you instantly fail, right? And so that's my like life motto. So when I left school, I didn't get into medicine first time around. So I moved to Wales and did medical sciences. And then after that kind of merged into medicine. And actually when I merged in, I was top of my year. So like I went from someone who wasn't the smartest in their year in school and almost like had this thing that I couldn't be smart enough or I would never be a doctor, and then taking myself into a new environment, and yeah, I just excelled and learned how to like what worked to my benefit and got there in the end. And I think, yeah, for me, telling that story is really important, because people look at the food medic or what I've achieved and they're like, oh well, she's done 3 degrees, clearly she's very, very smart. But actually, maybe I am intelligent, but I'm just very, very hardworking and very, very consistent and very, very persistent. And it's like what you do most of the time is what determines how successful you're going to be, whether it's academia, sport, life, whatever. And so no one tells you that part.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, I love that, because you're right. What you do most of the time, and by most of the time, that is usually daily. You know, it is the daily habits. It is the routines. And as much as it starts to become boring when it's like, make it routine, repetition, you know, persevere. That is actually the truth. You know, that's what I mean about the 10-year overnight success. So given that we've talked so much about, you know, achieving and striving and kind of balancing out the need for more and whether we should and becoming addicted, I don't really want to ask this question, but I'm going to frame it in a different way. So I'm not going to say like, oh, what's next, Hazel, you know, but I would love to know, as I know you well, I know that you're working on a lot of things. I'd love to know what you're most excited about right now.
So like I said, kind of a little bit earlier on in the podcast, I'm really focusing on the work that I do as part of the Food Medic, which if people aren't aware or heard of, it's kind of my educational platform, which I started way back in med school. And it's now like, you know, a couple of books, a podcast. And that is my, I've never had in my life where I've just focused on that. So it's really exciting for me to fully kind of get my teeth into it and expand and grow and try to reach more people. And so I am working on a book, which I can't really talk much more about, but like that's been my baby for the last year. So, you know, really excited for that to come out, hopefully 2022 with everything going well. And I am also working on a couple of other projects and products, which I think will be, you know, exciting for people. By the time this podcast comes out, I'm sure my journal will be out, which is a habit journal. And that's like, you know, people know me as a doctor, nutritionist, fitness, but, and so a habit journal is maybe slightly left field, but for me, it was really important because how I got to where I am and how I live a healthy lifestyle is all down to the habits that I've built and the practices that I've put into place. So for me, that's step one when people are starting to build their healthy journey or a healthy life, whatever it might be. And I come back to it all the time. I'm a huge fan of like James Clear and like Gregory McKeown. And I just think if people could start there, start with their behaviors, then it makes everything so much easier. So that's one big thing that I'm working on at the moment. And also I'm like moving towards more kind of like online webinars, hopefully workshops, maybe some courses. And yeah, I'm really excited about that because these are the things that have been on my like, I want to do this for many, many years. And I've just been like, I don't have time. Oh my God, I can't even think about that because I just can't, I don't have time to wash my hair anymore. And so to have this time is terrifying because I have to try it now. Like I have to do it.
Yes. You're going, it's exciting because you're going all in on yourself. And you know, for a lot of people who maybe when you say side hustle, you know, some people have a side hustle and it's, you know, it doesn't matter how big or how small or how many followers they have or many sales they have of their product or their book, whatever. But your side hustle is huge and it's grown. It's grown over time. And as you said, you've done it alongside work and study. And I'm so happy as a friend to literally know and to see you going all in on yourself because, you know, I wear a lot of hats too. And I think it's really, it's courageous. It's really courageous to go all in on yourself and go, these are my ideas. This is what I want to share with the world. This is what lights me up. And to just go full steam ahead, you know, with the support of whether it's the team, agents, book publishers, whatever, ultimately it still comes to you. You know, it's still your name on it. It's still your work. And so I'm very proud of you and I'm excited to see all of the things that are going to come.
Thank you. That means a lot. But yeah, you're right in that it's terrifying because it's on you if it doesn't work out. But like I said, like if you don't try, then you automatically fail. And so, and like, so what? So what if it doesn't work out? Like at least you've tried it. And also if it doesn't work one way, then try another way.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, it's not even a question in my mind about it failing. I feel like it's just more around, you know, which things will you enjoy the most? Which things will, you know, bring the most value to your community? It's just there's so many things there. It's almost like as well, I'm reading and researching a lot about this at the moment for a project that I will be talking about next year. But, you know, I like to think of it as there's lots of irons in the fire, you know? So instead of just having one where, you know, I think previously we've kind of been told that, you know, like go all in on one route, one thing, you know, become an expert and just do that one thing, which of course has merit and value. But I think if you can take that one thing, but then fraction it some way so that there's, like I say, different irons in the fire, then I think there's also less pressure on this like binary success and failure, because ultimately you can kind of go, well, you know, the whole eggs in one basket thing, you know, if one egg cracks, that's fine. We got six more. So, but anyways, honestly, Hazel, we never have enough time. I could always talk to you. I mean, I'm not going to let it be 3 years before we do another episode because this has just been amazing. I know the listeners are going to love this one. So if you're listening, if you're enjoying it, please let us know. I say this at the end of every show, but I think by the end, you know, when it's kind of like you've listened to the whole episode, I don't know, maybe you finished your drive or your run or whatever. And so it's quite easy to be like, yeah, wicked, cool, tune in next week. But I think, I guess just a little call out would be to say, firstly, thank you to everyone who actually takes like 20 seconds to go on iTunes and write a review, or takes 20 seconds to just do a screen grab and share a story. It's like, it really does, like, I don't know how you feel, Hazel, but I feel like it really makes a difference when you're like, oh, this person, you know, they say, oh, they learned this, or they shared that. So people that are like, oh, I sent this to my mum because, you know, I knew she would enjoy it. And it always, always puts a smile on my face. So if you do have 20 seconds to do that, I would really appreciate it. And let's move into the last part of the podcast, which of course is the Power Hour.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, last time you were on, Hazel, I don't know, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you remember what you talked about, what your power hour was like in 2018?
I think it was pretty much the same. Like, I start my morning by making my bed first thing.
That is exactly what you said. For anyone who's going to listen to it, that is exactly what she said. You were like, I make my bed, it is non-negotiable.
It's a non-negotiable. Like, even if I'm, like, away with anyone or, like, someone's staying over, I'm like, we got to make our bed.
Good to know. If you're staying at Hazel's house, you got to make that bed.
Because it's just like the first achievable thing that you can do in your day. And I think it just sets the tone for the rest of your day. So that's like number one.
Dopamine hit achievement.
Yeah. I try not to look at my phone I usually sleep with my phone in airplane mode and have like a Lumi clock as my alarm. So I try not to look at my phone for at least like 45 minutes, and that will be me. I'll get up and I'll make my coffee. I will get out my journal, and creating my own journal has been the reason I wanted to do it is because I have two journals normally, because I feel like there was no journal that offered me everything I needed, whereas like the journal that I've created starts with like a morning check-in, and then also like setting out your biggest goal for the day, and then like kind of writing out your personal and kind of work goals, and that has an evening checkout later on in the day. But I wanted something that kind of, first of all, is reflective when I first wake up. So what am I thinking about? How am I feeling? But then something that allows me to like channel my energy towards the rest of the day. So that's my kind of first thing in the day. And then I like to kind of have my shower, get ready, and ideally head to the gym prior to getting into work. Because again, I feel like that sets the tone for the rest of my day. I'm like a lot more motivated. I do my best thinking in the gym. So I'm like thinking, okay, I've got this project coming up today, or I'm on this podcast today, or someone's coming on the podcast. And yeah, I just feel like that makes me my most productive. And you know, sometimes that isn't how it goes. But yeah, over the years I've shaped it. I used to meditate a lot, and I don't actually really anymore, which I felt a bit of a failure of not doing anymore. But for me, I was forcing myself to do it. And when I was in the pandemic and working every day, it was actually making me ruminate on a lot of the hard things that were happening. So I swapped that for an end of the day walk, which I used to kind of close the stress cycle. If you've read the book Burnout, they talk about closing the stress cycle. And for me, that's like walking home from work or having a short walk after work, or they're kind of my ways of meditating now.
Yeah. And I guess things do change, you know, as we all change, we all evolve. And I think not having something that is set and rigid, you know, I did a talk recently, and at the end they were like, okay, you've talked about the power hour and goal setting and how to achieve, but they were like, what's your power hour? What do you do every day? And it's interesting because if you ask me, I guess now or a year or two ago, it does change. But I think for both of us, Hazel, even though what we do in that hour changes, I think how important that morning start is for both of us, you know, just that's the bit that, you know, I say joking about non-negotiable with the bed, but it really is non-negotiable for me to start my day in a way that I've chosen to. You know, I never want to just open my eyes and go straight into what everybody else wants and needs from me. I think that's something I've learned, you know, definitely over the last the pandemic and just different. I think the hybrid working thing for a lot of people, you know, they just don't feel like they can disconnect and switch off. So yeah, I think keeping that time is so, so important. And I know it's not always possible, but yeah, having a start of your day, which you decide, is really important.
Yeah, I agree. And also, like you said, if you're starting the day based on someone else's terms, like, you're never going to get the things achieved that you want to achieve. So the worst thing you can do is like open your emails as the first thing that you do in the morning.
Yeah, a friend of mine, she literally told me this and I was just almost so shocked for her. Not in a judgmental way, but just in like a, please don't do that. And she basically said that she wakes up, she gets her phone in bed, sits up in bed, goes through like work things, emails, different. They have a platform at work called Slack. So she was looking at Slack messages and then basically starts replying to them. So starts essentially doing her work from bed. And then she was like, once I've actioned loads of stuff, then I'll, if I have time, literally like have a shower. And she was like, then I just get my laptop and just carry on. So basically from about 90 seconds after waking up, she's already replying to people in her office. And I was just like, why do you do that? And she basically said it was because she felt that it was kind of the only way she could get ahead of the amount of work that she has to do at the moment. Like, her workload, she said, is just so much that she basically was like, unless I do that, yeah, I'm just constantly trying. She's just like, I'm just constantly trying to catch up. And again, I think because this particular friend, you know, she doesn't have children, she doesn't live with anyone. She was like, oh, it's harder because there's no one there to see me or to judge me or to kind of, you know, like if you've got a boyfriend or a husband or kids, you kind of, she was like, you couldn't do that. You couldn't literally open your eyes, start writing emails in bed because your partner would be like, what are you doing? But she said, there's no one there to see or judge me. So I just do it. And it's become her normal for the last year.
Yeah. That's it's sad that like that is people's normal, and I feel like I've definitely been that person and been that woman who's like, that's what you're doing, you know, straight away when you wake up in the morning. But like, I think like if I did that now, I would just never get dressed or get any work done because you just get like sucked into the ping pong of emails back and forth. And yeah, like you just, if you don't put your foot down and create boundaries, then it's such a slippery slope and you just lose less and less of your life.
Yeah, totally agree with that. So anyone listening, if that's you, we are not judging you, but we would love for you to start having a power hour of your own. So time to wrap it up. Hazel, it's been wonderful. It's been great. I feel like this is maybe going to be the start. Who knows? See what my producer Jack has to say. But of me on the road with my mic. I really hope we've done a good job with the sound. And I hope that the listeners have really enjoyed hearing our conversation. I'm sure they have. So please do let us know. Obviously, you can rate, you can review, all that good stuff I've already said. And just have an awesome week. Thank you so much, Hazel.
Thank you for having me.
See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.